Whenever I hear someone say that the music industry is on its last legs, I can't help but smile. I smile not because I'm glad to hear it said, but because the statement itself seems ridiculous to me. The music industry is doing just fine, whether people know it or not. The coffers might not be filled to the brim like they used to before the digital age, but I never paid too much attention to top shelf acts anyways. I've always been attracted to less popular, offbeat sounds. Now, I know the music we play is perceived as quite the contrary, but heavy music, hard rock music, for almost 40 years, has always been considered outsider music, despite the odd surge of popularity every now and then. This noisy clatter isn't for everyone. Most don't have the calloused eardrums for it, and if they think they do, they still need it fed to them in tiny, sparse doses. Of course, what accompanies this mainstream spurn is usually a delusional idea of the music and its fans. It can be annoying, but a small price to pay to have everyone else leave us alone to our music. And it's by leaving us alone to our own devices that I am filled with certainty the music industry, in whatever form, will continue forward, unperturbed by technological stumbling blocks. I see the proof in the small record labels around the world that operate outside of the established infrastructure, working diligently to curate a particular sound and/or image. These self-appointed scouts do the reconnaissance work our collective ears are craving and release it out into the world for us to find. Over time, a kind of trust is developed between record label and fanatic when the latter puts their faith in the former. It's a bond that isn't spoken about often in the music biz. Why? Well, because this is a rare part of the music industry driven by passion and fandom rather than strictly dollars and cents. This podcast, in a way, is a byproduct of that mindset. I don't scramble to get guests. I take pains in choosing who I want on this podcast. I'm not trying to make a quota or meet a deadline or trying to drive online traffic to some website or turn this into a sideline career. Guests are specifically asked to come on because I am a fan of what they do. During the course of this podcast's run, I've had two guests on who run record labels, Brian Slagle of Metal Blade Records and Lee Dorian of Rise Above Records. And of course, Lee is the singer of Cathedral. I'm a fan of both their labels. That's why I asked them on. There are many record labels out there, but only a handful that I put almost blind trust in or use as a vetting process to see if a band is even worth a listen. There's Season of Mist, Relapse, Brutal Panda in the States, Rise Above and Bad Omen in the UK. There's also Ectro Records in Finland. And in Canada, my home country, quietly and off to the side, is Profound Lore Records. I say that with almost surprise because the Canadian music industry, generally speaking, likes to think of itself as deep-thinking, safe, and folky. Sensitive and folky. Highbrow and folky. Did I say folky? 180 degrees away from what I grew up loving, and in its midst, just 1 hour from its center, lies Profound Lore, a label responsible for putting out incredible cacophonous groups like Portal, Monarch, Dawnbringer, Vol, Pallbearer, Prurient, Yob. The list is almost endless. I can't begin to tell you how wonderful it makes me feel that within my home of Canada, this sweet, polite, courteous country we are known around the world for being, lies this beautifully frightful beast of a record label. Almost brings a tear to my eye. What's even more intriguing is Profound Lore is a one-man show, run by Chris Bruni and only Chris Bruni, out in Kitchener, Ontario. There are many labels out there that purport to be heavy, but they only like how the word looks in a sentence and have no idea what the word means and sounds like. Bruni's label defines and redefines heavy music. Experimental, heavy metal, ambient, doom, and straight up noise. If you like what you hear with one Profound Lore release, you can trust that Bruni's carefully curated label will not disappoint you. Recently, I drove up to Kitchener and met with Chris at Profound Lore HQ to talk about the label and to meet the man responsible for all this ghastly noise. I'd like to thank Blue Mic Microphones and Skullcandy Headphones for supporting the podcast. I'd like to thank Chino Loco's Restaurants because when I want a fish burrito, I want it stuffed with chow mein noodles. And thanks to you for listening. If you haven't already, this podcast is free to subscribe to, free to download, and all the episodes are up on iTunes and SoundCloud. Okay, Chris Bruni is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. They play to get his Dankos, go out to love for free. I'm so glad I like to sometime. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down, down.
To the Danko Jones podcast. Well, fuck you, my man. You want me to take my fist and shove it up your ass? Because I will. Don't you dare say that shit about Danko Jones. Man, his podcast is the best in the whole world. Did you hear me? The best podcast in the whole fucking world.
Listen to the Danko Jones podcast. Listen to the Danko Jones podcast.
I began to notice that Danko was completely nuts. He'd suddenly start making weird sounds and scary faces for no reason at all. And it wasn't just embarrassing, it was alarming. And now, since I'm a devout Catholic, I asked my local parish priest about Danko's condition, and he was sure Danko was possessed by Satan. So I helped my priest perform an exorcism on Danko that very day, but it didn't work. The dude is seriously screwed, and according to my parish priest, will burn in hell for all of eternity if he doesn't get himself checked out.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready, because the Danko Jones podcast starts!
No!
Chris, I'm here. I made it. I'm in the Profound Lore lair.
I hope this didn't demystify anything of what you expected. It's got renovations going, but this is literally where it all happens in Kitchener, Ontario.
Kitchener, Ontario, and yes. Knowing you in just from what I've seen of you, and you know, you came to our show a couple of years ago and a few months ago.
Yeah.
And we hung out a little bit. I thought when I'd walk into Profound Lore HQ, you'd have like Pet Sounds playing or something to offset all the grimness.
Or no, you probably would have been hearing the hip hop I listen to. So that's what when I'm listening to stuff outside of what I put out, what I'm invested in, it's usually not metal at all. Electronic music, stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, that's what you probably would have ended up hearing.
Yeah, I always feel that, you know, people who delve so deep into this kind of extreme forms of music need to temper it with something completely opposite. And then what you find over years compounded is that these people, like yourself, have a real wide breadth of musical tastes.
Yeah, I'd like to say I do. At the same time, I like to say, you know, I have a discriminative and strict musical taste as well too. But it's a bit of both. I mean, with metal and heavier music, it's very, very discriminative.
Right.
I do put out a lot of releases, or a decent amount of releases per year.
I feel like, you know, there's a lot of people who are interested in what you're doing. They have an interest in your label.
Right.
Past the music.
Yeah.
You have become sort of the central figure simply mm-hmm. because, whether people know it or not, and now they will, Profound Lore is a one-man team putting out very extreme music. So in a sense, you're the ultimate curator. Like, you have taken a very, very distinct, very, very fine type of music and turned it into your career.
I like to think of it as, you know, it's an eclectic roster, an eclectic amount of releases. It's obviously not just one style of metal. It's a lot, and a lot of different styles of, whether it's metal, heavy music, whether it's not even, you know, dark music, not even metal at all. I've put out stuff that's obviously not even close to being metal. Like the Hell and Money record, mm-hmm. the Prurient record last year, and the upcoming new Dalek record, which comes out April 22nd. That's a hip-hop album, experimental hip-hop, but, you know, dark, but still dark. And it's something that fits within what I do. When I posted about, you know, the announcement for the Dalek album, it's not like people were like, oh my God, he's putting out a hip-hop album? That's so weird. No, it's like, that is really fucking awesome.
You know, you do have Profound Lore has an image and a sound, but under that sound, if you were to get a little closer,
right,
like you mentioned just now, the people on it are as diverse as, you know, Helen Money, who's a cellist.
Yeah.
And then there's Paul Bearer, which is like a kind of a doomy
epic melodic yeah. doom metal.
And then you've got stuff like Monarch, and it just goes on, and Portal,
yeah.
It goes on and on, but they're all different.
Yeah.
But they all, I love how you're curating this kind of sound and image, and it's in its most extreme form.
Yeah, I'd like to think so too. There's no really thought pattern behind it. It's not like, okay, I have to do these kind of releases to create this image. It just all comes together. I know what I like. You know, I've been listening to this kind of music for a really, really long time. You know, I know what I like in my death metal. I know what I like in my black metal.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I like in, you know, my traditional metal, doom metal. You know, I like, you know, I do have a broad palette of what I like. At the same time, you know, I like to see myself as discriminative with my tastes in heavy music and metal. At the same time, you know, it's broad as well too. I don't want to see it. And the one thing I worry about sometimes, but it's not really much of a worry, is that some people probably think I put out too many different styles of heavy music and metal. It's like I'm having an identity crisis or something.
Mm-hmm.
I can't make my mind up. Okay, does this guy want to release death metal here? Does he want to release, you know, post metal here? Does he want to release, you know, what does he want? You know, I know I've been accused on the odd occasion of having an identity crisis in a way, because I put out so many different styles, but I don't really see it that way. I see it as more of a collective.
Similar, like,
aesthetically similar. Yeah, that's something like a lot of people, like, that's something that I thought only I could feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a feeling. It's right. Not, you know, but other people feel it too. And well, I've been noticing that as well too. Like, you know, when I put out stuff like Prurient, like, people see how that fits. It's not like...
I completely see how they fit.
Yeah.
Or it fits or whatever in the whole Profound Lore. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Whether it's, you know, black metal like Leviathan, or, you know, stuff like Old Man Gloom. You know, it all makes sense.
Yeah, well,
in a way.
I mean, some of my favorite labels over the years, and what makes a label my favorite is, you know, there's got to be maybe three or four consecutive releases that I like.
Okay, right.
And then, like, bands, labels like Touch and Go,
right,
in the 90s.
Yeah.
Were a great example of it. I think what you were doing now,
See, I like that comparison. That's right. What I want to hear. You know,
right.
People compare me to, you know, I want to hear stuff like, you know, Touch and Go, 4AD,
right. Matador.
Matador.
Right.
What else?
Well, there's M-Rep, but M-Rep
I get that.
They didn't really stray from the formula as much as Touch and Go did.
Touch and Go did. Right, right, yeah. Right. So, yeah, those are the labels I like to kind of model. You know, right. Myself after, you know, some classic metal labels as well too, or metal labels from the early, you know, when the stuff they were putting out in the early 90s,
yeah.
For example, but you know, stuff like, yeah, you mentioned Touch and Go, like what Matador's doing, 4AD.
I love labels that are like yours, that are curated, that are very, you know, very selective with the releases and who they put on and all this stuff. But then comes the enormous reality check.
There's always expectations for different releases, right? Every project has a different scenario, right? And sometimes there are projects you do it just because of the love of the music.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be hard to recoup. Sometimes these love of, you know, the projects you do, these smaller projects that you do just because you love the music a lot and you don't expect a lot of return back. You know, sometimes they go a little over budget. And you just do it and you're like, I just love the music so much. So that attitude is there too, in a way.
But eventually you just kind of got to go, hey, I can't love it this much, right?
Yeah, you have to, they're back to the reality check. You have to be like, hey guys, you know, this is the situation where you're at.
I think what's so fascinating about watching you from the sidelines is I think you've, over the years, you've just like put out these releases slowly that have gotten everybody's attention. And then when people start to like look into what this whole profound lore thing is, they realize it's just you. And then I think you have become this central figure now, almost threatening to be even bigger than the bands you're putting out, just as a character or personality.
As a character, yeah,
just
I guess.
Of how you're pulling this off by yourself. Do you have an intern?
I have people that help me out. I have, you know, you work with different publicists and whatnot,
right.
And I have a graphics person. I have a, you know, I have a friend helping me out to coordinate things.
That's what I, like, that's what got me really interested in you is you're in Kitchener, man.
Out of all places, yeah.
Well, people who don't live in Canada, I have to describe, Kitchener is like a real, like, it's not Toronto. It's an hour from Toronto, or in my case today, 2 hours out of Toronto.
Right.
Because of the crazy traffic. But I found it interesting that this most extreme label you can find that's actually succeeding and churning out, like, release after release is based out of Kitchener, this nice, quaint...
Kitchener, the KDL, Kitchener Waterloo, it's very, you know, it's very entrepreneur, you know, it's an entrepreneurial scene here.
Yeah. BlackBerry and
BlackBerry, you know, there's Communitech. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of artists, in the area. There's a lot of small businesses, startups, coming up. So, you know, in an area, like, it's very cultural, like when it comes to stuff like art. And local activities and stuff like that. That's what I find in Kitchener Waterloo.
Yeah, but I mean, I've got this the idea I have of Canadian music and Canadian art. It's like this pioneery kind of image, and you are this hellish. You're the guy on the block at the end of the block in the Scooby-Doo cartoon who lives in the fucking haunted house. That's you.
I'm sure some of the local Kitchener, you know, the people involved in the scene kind of think of me that way.
Yeah, right.
Because I think some of them, I think I probably creep out some of these
people. Oh, you like heavy metal, man? I love Iron Maiden. And then you just, you know.
I love Iron. I mean, like, I love
Iron
Maiden.
We all love Iron Maiden.
I love Iron Maiden, too.
But then you whip out what you're actually working on, and it's like, oh, this isn't really Run to the Hills.
It's funny. Like, even
playing Leviathan or something.
Well, it's funny. Like, Kitchener is a very, you know, Kitchener Waterloo is a city. It's an area where there's, again, they promote, you know, people in art. We have, you know, we have art festivals in the city, you know, music festivals.
Yeah, we played
you played
it,
which you played.
Koi.
So there's a lot of that going on
right.
in the city. A lot of artists, a lot of, you know, people, you know, tech companies is the big thing here. We have the Communitech Hub, a lot of startups happening here. So it is a thriving community in that sense. And it's funny, like if you look on Twitter, you know, a bunch of us are following each other, mm-hmm. local businesses,
right. Okay.
restaurants, you know, the mayor.
The mayor of Kitchener follows Profound Lore?
Yeah.
Really?
On Twitter, yeah. It's the city of Kitchener follows me on Twitter. So we're all this, you know, community because we're all, you know, small business, thriving small businesses. And that's what I kind of see Kitchener-Waterloo as.
Right.
You know, this thriving small business kind of community here. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, it's not like I hang out with any of these people or go to. I don't get invited to parties or anything like that, or social parties or anything like that, but I don't know where I fit in into all this.
Right.
I mean, you know, I've gotten, you know, Kitchener name dropped in some of these, you know, other music publications,
right.
well-known publications. Yeah. So it's whatever, but I'm sure some of them think that I'm like, again, like this weirded dude that puts out this fucked up, eclectic, dark music.
Right. Like Scoob, keep on walking past this guy's house. I'm fascinated by the noise scene.
Yeah.
Only because I like it. I like it, but it's almost like dance music to me,
mm-hmm.
where it's very hard to track as a listener. For example, you know, getting into hard rock and heavy metal, like, yeah, okay. Iron Maiden's coming out with a new album. Everybody knows.
Right.
You know, whereas these guys, they just put it out sometimes quicker than you once a year. Or like there's... Like, just like dance music, the output is...
It's pretty...
Different labels, and in some of it's... Yeah, it's constant flow, and there isn't usually a label to kind of
market.
And track it. How do you find a band like Prurient?
Well, Prurient have been doing the noise thing for over 20 years.
But how do you find them? Like, how do you...
Just listening...
And how do you track them?
Just listening to underground... Just through different networks throughout the years, listen to underground music, you know, you get into the noisier stuff, then you read or hear about, you know, an act like Prurient that just comes up, you check them out, and it's like, it's really harsh stuff, you know. Prurient has a pretty, the Prurient repertoire is insane, there's so many releases.
You're right.
And so, you know, the Dominic of Prurient also ran, you know, he has his record label, which I've known of too. Right. So he's done stuff on that too. So it's just been, I mean, in the American noise scene, there's, you know, he's probably one of the pioneers in the genre. And, so, you know, so, you know, there are people like that you've always known about, throughout the years, just of listening to extreme music in general, right? Even some of these, you know, industrial, martial ambient, noise kind of projects out of Europe, right? You read about them in zines. You become intrigued, and then you somehow search for these. And this is before mail order was, you know, I guess this is the time, I guess, before, you know, it was when it was not as easy to order something online. You'd have to actually mail in money or stuff like that. Or the very early stages of online ordering. So you just like discover all this stuff through reading zines and, you know, just talking with other people, you know, saying, check this out. So you discover a lot of like dark, some are really dark, you know, artists within that noise industrial scene, right? Some of them are, you know, are really sketchy as well too.
Sketchy
right?
How?
Just like, just subject matter.
Politics?
Sometimes a little bit of that, the way they present themselves in, you know, in their projects. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, it was an exciting time, like discovering all this noise stuff. That was like, I was doing that maybe in 2000, 2001, mm-hmm. when I started to really delve into that kind of stuff, like, you know, crazy power electronic projects from this, you know, from Europe and the US. And you just, it was pretty, that was a kind of, I don't want to say it's a phase, but there was a moment when I was searching out for a lot of this kind of stuff, and just because, you know, delving into something extreme, you know, different in within extreme music in general, right? I always wanted to push my listening threshold.
Same with me.
Like when is too much, you know, yeah. How much I can I actually yeah. take? So there was a phase when there was, you know, I'd want to find some of the most harshest, most extreme power electronics you could find. So right. I'd come across some really fucked up stuff during that time. But it's exciting, you know, it's exciting discovering that new kind of music like that.
What do you feel about the advent of Bandcamp and stuff like that?
Because it's a great tool.
It's a rabbit hole upon another rabbit hole, I feel.
Because it's somewhere where you can legitimately, you know, listen to something before you buy it, I guess. It's a great, you know, it does help with the sales.
Right.
Bandcamp, you know, my Bandcamp stuff does pretty well depending on the release.
Yeah.
It's there for you to sample, check out. There's also, it's personalized where you can even have, you put up links if you want to buy the physical copy.
You're right, yeah.
So stuff like that. It's good. I think it's, you know, I'm a fan of it.
I like it a lot.
It's,
but in terms of finding music, especially in the noise right. genre you're talking about yeah. and the ambient, dark ambient genre, you type in a genre or type in words, and what you're hit with is just this ocean of music, and I don't know where to begin.
Like, you know what? I don't think for something like that, I don't think Bandcamp would be.
It's an ocean, man.
But it's, if you go on YouTube and you type any of these bands in, samples will come up. So
you what can, do you mean?
Like, if you go on, you can, you know, people put music on YouTube.
Yeah.
They put like a video clip, not a video clip, but just like the album cover, yeah. and then you can hear the song.
Yeah.
That's, you know, a lot of people these days, you know, what I heard is that the first place people go to discover new music when they want to look something up, if they want to hear it, they'll go on YouTube.
Same with me.
Yeah.
It's, I do that like too. There.
Yeah. So,
but what I'm saying is like, okay, I've done this in the past where I've gone, okay, let's find some like really dark ambient music.
Okay.
That verges on noise. So I go on Bandcamp, I type it in. And then I'm like, wow, this sounds pretty cool.
I've never done that.
I bookmark it.
You can do that via genre, like yeah. this. Oh, I know yeah, that. I've never tried.
Yeah, it's the bottom of the scroll.
Oh, and wow, okay.
It brings you to the actual page of the genre.
The genre. Oh, I didn't know that.
And then
that.
It's just pages upon pages. And
wow.
I started bookmarking the first few that I thought were cool, and then I like.
But the thing, like, I think,
how some, do I bookmark 20?
But like I think something bookmarks? Like that, because a lot of people are making this kind of music,
yeah,
and it's so easy to put music up on Bandcamp.
Yeah,
I think you're gonna come across a lot of that.
It's like I can't, and then you lose, you know, focus, and I'm like, I don't even know if this is good anymore.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's a different. Yeah, I've never tried that because when I look for certain artists in that genre, like it's a name, you know, I'll look them up via, you know, the band name or the artist yeah. name. So that's kind of how I do it. I mean, like I said, it's so easy to make, you know, a lot of people make this music, they put it up on their Bandcamp. Then obviously that, if you do a broad search, general search, that's gonna,
some of these were personalized by their name,
really,
like their full name, and I'm like, all right, let's see what Laura is making,
right? Okay.
And then I'm like, well, it's not bad because it is just ambient or noise or whatever.
Right, right. So again, like I still, when you discover new stuff like that, it's just, you know, read reviews on popular music blogs, you know, websites right. or blogs.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that too.
Sure.
Like when it comes to like, you know, because I'm still kind of, when it comes to like electronic music, I'm still kind of new getting, I've mm-hmm. listened, I've been getting into it for, at least for like last maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I'm not like an expert on it. I just, you know, I read, you know, some of these popular music websites, you come across and you're like, oh, they're all talking about this electronic music artist. I'm going to check them out. Right. Or an electronic music label. There's an electronic music label you like. You know, you always check out stuff they, you want to check out stuff they keep putting out. So, yeah, it's kind of like, I like that kind of natural kind of flow.
Right.
Where specific artists, you know.
Yeah.
You do, you check out through.
Where the artist has been vetted through a label or
something. Yeah. Sort of, yeah. Yeah. You know, obviously, like, you know, a new release by Warp Records, you know, I'm going to want to check that out.
Right, right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Like, I went down a rabbit hole or two, yeah, like 3 or 4 years ago when I started to get into, like, the noise, just as, like, just checking it out. Like, I don't know anything about it. I want to check it out.
Yeah.
Of course, I started with some names that everybody probably knows,
right,
in the underground. And then I think I posted something online, and there was someone who reached out to me, and they said, have you heard about all these avant-garde classical composers that have been around for decades?
Right.
And then that just, I did a search, found this top 50 avant-garde experimental classical composers. Composers. And I'm like, this fucking shit never ends. Like, that's when I was like, oh my God, I'm like, first of all, met with the realization that people were doing this decades before I thought, you know, oh, I had just stumbled upon this.
And I like a lot of, like, you know, Arvo Part. I'm a huge fan of that guy's work. Really dark chorale music. Really religious, too. It's really fat. You know, it's beautiful stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I have a background. You know, I played classical music when I was a kid.
Oh, really?
So, I had a musical upbringing.
Okay.
So, yeah, I studied with the Royal Conservatory.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. Did you play in bands?
No, I've never played in any bands. That's the thing. Like, in high school, you know, it wasn't cool playing classical music. It wasn't cool playing Bach, Mozart.
But you didn't think to maybe take that into the metal?
I never did, because, like, in high school, like, the people who got dates were the ones playing shitty Nirvana covers. Right. You know, at the Battle of the fucking Bands or whatever.
Right, right.
Or doing stupid U2 covers or, I don't know, something like that.
Right.
But it was never, you know, playing classical music, you know, I don't think it was cool in high school. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the reason why it was just because studying with the conservatory, I had a teacher, you know, I went to a teacher every week. There was just so much pressure, you know, because you got to do the exams, you got to do the recitals. The pressure was just so immense. It was hard to enjoy.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was so hard to enjoy doing it. And it was just, I mean, I played every composer. I played Bach. I played Mozart. I played Beethoven, Mendelssohn, I played Brahms, Franz Liszt, you know, Chopin, you know, you name the composer, whether it's Baroque, classical, or the Romantic era, I played them all.
Wow.
All the main, you know, all the main ones, but it was just so, you could not enjoy.
And how long did you do this for?
I did it, I ended in, but just before I went to university.
Oh, wow.
So, and that when was did in 90s. Start? I started when I was maybe 10 years old. Like,
oh,
early.
So you could really play.
Well, that might be. Well, I wouldn't stretch it to that. But, I mean, it was early in elementary school, maybe the third, fourth grade, doing basic stuff. Maybe third grade or something like that. And then I finished in 96 because I was going to university that year. So I couldn't continue it. But I accomplished what I wanted to do. I accomplished my grade 9 conservatory. I did, you know, got the history certificate, my theory, the harmony. So I did all that, like written stuff. So I did that for that part. But it was just like, you couldn't really enjoy it because there was so much pressure. You know, you had to practice your pieces. You had to practice your technique. You had to practice your scales, your chords. There's a lot of that that was just. And then after I had that last lesson, it was just like, it felt like the weight of the world was just lifted off my shoulders. Like that, you know, I've never even felt that much pressure during any kind of schooling, whether it's in high school, university, or college, or any of that.
Why is that?
I don't know, because I don't know. I'm not gonna say it was a teacher, but it was just like, when I was in, you know, university, or, you know, I guess there was a easier way of pacing yourself. Like, when you play the piano, you and you're playing a piece of music on the piano, you don't want to screw up. You want to play it right. You want to play every note right. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, you want to make sure you play every measure right and everything. Just the littlest thing you screw up on, it's like,
right,
you know, you get really conscious about that. Whereas like in school, if you get, you know, 85% on an exam or test, it's right, still right. an A, right?
Right.
You
so it's got to be 100%.
You know, with doing piano lessons and whatnot and the exams, like you, that mentality kind of, I guess, is inherent that you have to get this, play this perfectly right.
Right.
By
right.
memory too.
Right.
So it's pretty, and I remember my last piano exam was really, how should I say? It was really, it was weird because it was like the hottest day of the year. And, it was in this church that had no air conditioning. And I remember going in, I remember the examiner there was just like, he had like 3 fans on him and he was still sweating. He just wanted to get the whole thing over with. Like, right. I'd be playing a piece, like, okay, that's good. Let's go to the next one. Cause it was just so hot. It was like a furnace in there. So I'm not going to say that was an advantage
right?
when I did my last piano exam,
aced it.
But it was just like, he was just like, okay, yeah, that's good. Let's go to the next one.
Right. Right.
I think, and yeah, like I'll never forget that. I was like dripping. I remember
onto the keys.
My clothes were just dripping. The examiner had 3 fans on him, 2 on the side and 1 like facing him. And he was just like, yeah. So, but stuff like that, practice, you know, you practice so much for these exams, right? Especially like the grade 9 exam in particular, you had to know when it came to your technique, your scales, you had to know everything, every key. You know, and they ask you to do the chords, you have to know everything, every key. And it was weird because the first thing, before you play your pieces in the exam, you do the technique stuff, right? So I remember walking in and I forget what scale I had in my head, like D minor, or let's say D minor, for example. I had D minor in my head, sat at the piano, okay, the examiner's going through his thing, and the first thing he asked me to play was that scale I had in my head. It was the strangest thing, and I just like, oh. Banged it out.
Oh, great. Because
I had it in my head. It was just, but it's just so, you know, what's the probability of him asking you, you know, the first scale you play on to start off your exam is a scale you've been thinking about the entire day on the way there.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that was kind of another strange occurrence that happened.
right.
During that piano exam, but yeah, like I said, it was hard to enjoy, really. And I haven't touched a piano in a while
since,
it's been so long. You know, the piano is still at my parents' place. It's really out of tune. I don't know. Like my sister finished further. She went a little further than I did. So I don't know, you know, I wish I saw, you know, still had all the piano books. I don't know what happened to them.
Wow. You know, she went further than you.
She went a little further, yeah, because she had, you know, more time before she went to university.
Right.
So, yeah, she went a little further than I did.
Right.
You know, but I accomplished what, you know, something I'm proud of.
Does this musical background help you discern bands now?
You know what? I think the one thing when my piano teacher told, out of all my piano teacher students, the one thing I was the best at out of all their students was the playback thing. The playback thing was a thing on the exam where the examiner would play something for you and you'd have to play it back, right? Just, you know, on the right hand, not like this crazy, crazy elaborate piece. They'll tell you, okay, I'm going to play you a measure. This is going to be in the key of D major. And then they would do it. And that, out of all my piano teacher students, I was by far her best student in doing that. Because I would nail it pretty much like on the first try. And you're allowed to make mistakes on the exam.
Right.
When you do the playback stuff, but I would get it like
right
away. And I think it's understanding the way melody works, the way melody, the way it's composed, the way it's, you know, I think that it comes from that. Mm-hmm. I think so, an understanding how,
but like, let's say like a Leviathan,
right? It's a very, you know, Leviathan has its melodic moments, mm-hmm. as well too, but notwithstanding melody, but Leviathan has
like Portal
is just Avon. Yeah. No melody there, but there's a, you know, Portal has insane counterpoint going on, mm-hmm. in their music. It's very avant-garde. It's artsy. It's,
I love them.
There's no like riff.
It's it's like an abyss.
It's an abyss. Yeah. It's riffage. Like a void of riffage. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they were supposed to come out with an album last September. They ditched it.
No way.
Yeah. So we're rewriting it from scratch. It's
been like 3 years.
It's been, yeah. Man. And that doesn't surprise me. They ditched the album and rewriting it. I mean, I haven't.
You obviously know those guys, but. Yeah. You're going to put out the next record?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's the deal with the clocks?
That was the curator's look. Oh, you mean...
Don't they have a clock on their head?
Like the curator for one... Like, every album, he has a different... The curator has a different image. Okay. So they're after... For their second album... After their second album was released, you know, he had the clock... image on, yeah. his head when they played their record. I believe when they played their record release show for Outre, that's how he appeared, yeah. and it was just like. But then when Swarth, when the
it
next
got my attention, that's
when
sure.
when yeah, it got a lot of people's attention, yeah. and then when Swarth came out, he had a different look to him.
Okay.
Well, it's funny because in the Swarth album photos, he has the clock head,
right.
but when they started playing shows for Swarth, he had a different image.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like a Black Pope kind of thing.
Okay, right.
So that was his image.
I could see that.
Yeah, that's how I was. So, and then when they played Maryland Death Fest for the first time several years ago, there were a lot of people who were like, where are they? Everyone's expecting the clock head. They're like, where is this? I'm like, that's past. He's not doing that now.
What?
So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like call people over. Check this band out. Dude's wearing a clock on his head. Yeah.
It was that video clip that. It was that one video clip that got a lot of like,
I'm sure it's the one I saw.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the
one. But past that, when right. I listen to the band, I'm like, this is exactly how I said it. It's like an abyss of like of guitar riffage. And it just kind of like
turns it on itself. It's inverted. It's amazing. Very, yeah.
It's incredible. Actually, if you know, even for just a listener of music, just listen to it for simply for the music. It's incredible.
For the atmosphere. And then, you know, they have the look, the costumes, yeah. the aesthetic. It all fits there.
It's amazing.
It has
yeah.
this very artsy kind of...
The name itself is not a traditional kind of heavy metal,
no.
death metal, black metal.
It's weird. And when I first released them for their first album, well, when I released their first album, it was technically a re-release because right. it was only available in Australia in a very yeah. limited pressing. So I released it and I thought people would get into it right away. This is so different. This is kind of warped, cool imagery, cool artwork, mm-hmm. packaging. But it was hard. I guess a lot of people didn't, they're like, what kind of production is this?
Right.
So it took a bit to kind of really.
Did you find when, what is it,
Vexavoid
came out? Did you find people coming back and re-examining them?
Oh yeah, yeah. Nah, I mean, people do. You know, it's all their albums are. You know, with all their all the stuff, people are going back.
Yeah.
And this, when I released that first, when I released Sepia, it was like, okay, no one's buying, no one's checking this out. Obviously, I didn't have much of a distribution network back then, so it was, you know, a different scenario. But yeah. it was just, you know, you really push for people to get into this fucked up avant-garde, you know, inverted death metal. And I think it's that understanding of music that it does play a sense into, you know, how I perceive other music too. Because I like melody. I love when stuff's melodic. Black metal, you know, I prefer my black metal to be, you know, whether it's lo-fi or grim or, you know, black metal that's better produced. You know, I personally don't like black metal that sounds pristine or nicely produced. I like it. It should be dark, grim, and atmospheric. But I, you know, I prefer that to have, you know, like mournful melodies as opposed to brutality and aggressiveness.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think people mistake, and I'm part of those people, is they mistake melodic with being, you know, dainty and
happy.
Pretty.
You know, when you say melodic death metal, some people are like, well, that's like, whatever.
You band. Have to lead me to the melodic. Because, for example, like, you know, even in our band, right. JC, our bass player, he would always harp on melody. And I'd be like, well, melody, I mean, we're a fucking rock band. And then he would say, well, the Misfits were very melodic.
They were,
and
yeah.
Then melody, that would lead me to...
Melody helps make, you know, in rock, I guess it would help make a chorus catchier,
yeah.
maybe. So, but, you know, Leviathan has... You know, plenty of melodic moments, and they're beautiful.
Yeah,
that's the way it's
a matter of this. How I see it, as someone who is a rock and roller mainly,
yeah,
who listens to this kind of music on off to the side, it's when I can lose myself, immerse myself in the sound world they are painting for me.
Right. If exactly. That makes any kind of sense. Yeah. Yeah.
A complete enveloping of sound.
And that's and that's when you look at a band like Leviathan, that's how I feel too.
Yeah.
Again, back to, you know, when Jeff of Leviathan creates, you know, a melodic moment in Leviathan, I think it's, you know, some people may think it's like, you know, evil sounding or just like, or whatever. I think it's fucking beautiful. It's right. just like, it's really dark. It's morbid, but at the same time, it's beautiful when bands do stuff like that in black metal, especially, right? So, you know, with Cobalt especially, I love there are moments on the new album where they're like melodic breaks, which are again really beautiful. And when Eric of Cobalt was writing the new album, I'm like, well, you got to have these kind of moments, like, you know, from the song from, you know, your previous album, like this part I really love. Are there going to be moments like that on the new album? Like these really lush melodic parts. And he's like, oh yeah, we're going to have some of that too. So like, I'm a big fan of that stuff. So, yeah. And if executed properly, you know, so cool. Yeah.
Well, Chris, man, thanks a lot. This has been,
hope I gave
exactly enough. What I was hoping it would be.
yeah.
The twists and the turns on the traffic, literally.
Yes.
I
gotta make your trip worthwhile. So
yeah, man. Yeah. And it was, but thanks, man.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.